Welsh. Today we get to talk about renovating old houses, talking with the amazing folks who are doing the Minka Summit once again. Thanks so much for joining, Andrea and Lauren.
Hello, thanks for hosting us.
It's a joy, thank you.
Wonderful.
It is a joy with joy.
We are hoping Stuart's going to be able to join. We're having some technical difficulties. But that's kind of one of the things that I wanted to say. I am so appreciative and just in awe that you guys are able to pull off yet another third year in a row of this amazing event from different parts of the country. How's it been? Are you building on strength? Is it getting easier every year?
Yeah, I think so. What do you think? I think so.
I think we're definitely building on strengths. You know, we have more experience now, and so we're learning as we go what seems to work well and what doesn't work quite as well. And you know, continuing and building on the things that do work well, and then sort of adjusting things that don't, and then also always adding in new things, which is, I think, really fun and exciting. And, you know, you mentioned about we're all in different places in Japan, but it's funny, even though I know that Lauren is, you know, way on the other side of Japan, and Stuart, of course, is in Hanase. Everyone is very spread out. So I think because we work really, really well together, and we're very happy, you know, very engaged with each other kind of board. So it doesn't feel like we're far apart at all.
Yeah, well, that makes a big difference. And I think Andrea and Lauren, I've talked to both of you before individually on my show. Andrea, your organization, Kominka Collective, is doing such wonderful work. And you have a booth also at the Minka Summit every year. It's great to have you and your expertise involved in kind of this new Minka Summit event, building on your knowledge. So that's a really important part of it. And Lauren, you bring to the table your hospitality, travel industry expertise, but also Lauren, this year. Lauren, this year especially, you're going to do a session on the Noto Peninsula. That's been such a really important and very difficult topic. But of course, when we're talking about our love of old houses, that's something a lot of people are really thinking about.
Yeah, it was inspired because somebody posted on the Facebook page that they had been thinking about buying a Minka on Noto, but after the earthquake, and they saw on television, I don't even think it's someone who lives in Japan, but you know, all the devastation, they decided Minkas weren't safe and they didn't want to buy one. But mainly what you're seeing on the news is, you know, Wajima and Suzu. You're seeing cities, you're seeing towns. Stuart, hey.
Stuart made it! Yay! Thanks so much for joining, Stuart. Lauren's just talking a little bit about her session on the Noto. Go ahead, Lauren.
Yeah, no, it's just that it made a lot of us realize, like, I live in a Minka, and I live in Noto Hanto, and, you know, we had some damage, but nothing, our house didn't collapse, if anything, you know, 120 years of 2-foot beams, you know, it held everything up really well. So it just made me think, like, I don't want people feeling like, oh no, I can't buy an old house because it'll collapse on me. Like, it doesn't have to be that way. So just getting a few different people from different perspectives to talk about it from an architecture perspective, from a living in Noto perspective, from a hopefully a structural perspective, just to maybe reassure people and also give them some ideas what they can do if they already have a Minka or they really are in love with one, but they're worried, like what you can do going forward to make your home safer.
That's really important. And I think on a lot of people's minds, whether they own it or they're thinking about buying one, for sure.
Right.
Stuart, you are a key person, the only one on the poster. I'm so glad you were able to join. But also, you are in the village, which is host once again this year, just outside of Kyoto, about an hour outside of Kyoto in beautiful Hanase Village. Are the villagers, are they ready to welcome all of us once again?
Well, it seems like all the local ryokan are pretty much booked, so they're happy about that. And we've got a number of local people that are definitely going to be part of the summit with booths and workshops and other things happening. So yeah, I think people are getting very excited here.
That's great. Well, shall we go through what's going to happen? Give people a bit of a preview. So everything people can see is on the website and on the Facebook page. Is that right?
Yeah. So yeah, we're still working on the website. It's sort of a work in progress as we bring the schedule together and finalize speakers and all of that. So things aren't carved in stone for everything right now, but there's a lot of information that should really help answer questions for people.
Now, one of the really unique things that was really popular from the first year that you've been doing every year are these amazing Minka tours. So I'm showing the Kominka Summit page right now, the Minka Tours at a Glance. Friday, going to Miyama Kayabuki no Sato, so the Thatch Village. It's a beautiful place. And then Saturday, Kuta Village. Sunday, the Roots of Minka. And also Sunday, a choice to go to Minka a la Francaise. That is a little bit different from the first year, is that right?
Yes. The first year we set up a system where people would sign up and could sort of create their own tour. And we set up, I think it was around 14 different Minka they could visit. And that system worked really well in some ways and not so well in others. So then at Aichi, which was under the supervision of Andrea, she set up a bus system, and that worked well in some ways and not so well in others. So what we're kind of doing here is doing a sort of more focused excursions. So the Miyama one, I think, will be a lot of fun because I think there are 39 thatched roof Minka all in one place. It's not the entire village, but it's about 90% of the village. And they also have a Minka museum there that you can go in and you can see all the different rooms, and they have little displays of things. You can go in the Kura, you can see the Umaya and all the different parts. And there's also an indigo museum there. There are cafes you can stop and have some coffee. So it's a little tiny bit touristy. It's a little different vibe from regular Minka occupied by regular people. But for particularly foreign visitors or foreign residents who live in other far-flung parts of Japan that have never had a chance to see it, it's definitely worth seeing. And then the Kuta experience on Saturday morning is really interesting, I think. Kuta is a tiny village that is directly north of Hanase. And a lot of people say, oh, Hanase is so remote. No, you should see Kuta. Kuta is really like, you really feel like you're stepping back into Edo period Japan or something. There's only about, I think they had like 500 residents early post-war. Now they're down to about 70, but it's an absolutely beautiful village. People come from all, professional photographers come from all over Japan to take photographs of the, I guess it's purple chrysanthemums, big fields of that, and then with Minka in the background. So it's a really, really beautiful village. So we're going to visit several Minka there. There is a traditional tool museum that people will be able to go to. And they'll also be able to visit the house of a permanent foreign resident named Gwen Halverson, who has a beautiful, beautiful Minka that she hasn't been able to live in for a number of years because of work and other reasons. So it's kind of, you know, it's in a little slight state of decay, but as soon as you step in it, you can see how beautiful it is. And she's actually actively looking for someone to buy it or rent it long term. So I wouldn't be surprised if one of the attendees this year makes her an offer, you know.
What a great result from the event. I love that.
Yeah, we had the first Hanase event, we actually had someone really trying to buy one person's Minka, and he kept like raising the offer and everything. And the guy's like, no, thank you. I'm really pleased, but I want to give it to my kids when I get old. And so it could happen. Who knows? So that's Kuta. And then Sunday, people will have a choice. They can go to visit the incredible Minka of Sebastian and Melanie, who are professional architects, and they're very into sustainability issues. And their Minka was on the tour 2 years ago, but it's been completely transformed since then. They have they've taken off the tin roof and grew their own thatch and harvested their own thatch and let it dry, and then working with some roof thatching experts, there's a photo right there of them working on it, and the final results are absolutely stunning. And it's not just the roof, but they've also, since the last summit in Hanase, they've transformed their Naya, their barn, into an office. And they've created even the chicken coop I want to live in. It's so nice. So that's really fun.
Yeah.
And it's really,
they've done amazing projects all over. I think my partner was saying we had a great project by them in Hiroshima with benches moving through the city. And whenever I visit Kyoto as well.
Oh, that's what brought them to Japan, I think, was that project.
How great. Yeah.
So there's that. And then also on Sunday, we have Hisaya Furuhara-san, who, there he is. He is the owner of the Furuhara Sawmill, which is the last surviving lumber company in the area. And he's going to give a talk about, and with a lot of, you know, show and tell, about the different types of wood that are used to make different parts of the Minka and their advantages and disadvantages. He's got, he basically has a mountain behind his lumber mill that's his, and he's been trying to do a lot of sustainable forestry, particularly to sort of gradually get rid of all the cedar that was planted all over Japan at the end of World War II. Which is all just, you know, it's become a nightmare in a way, ecologically, and create this sustainable forest that's more like what Japan looked like in the Edo period, with lumber that will last and be far superior to what is used today. So, so these tours are going to be great. I think people will be very excited.
Yeah, I was really interested to read about him in your description on the Facebook page, talking about the roots of Minka and how, as B. Brown talks about in his book as well, how when the architects are using the wood from the forest, they're planning 400 years down the road by planting trees that they want to use four generations later. And that just blows my mind, you know, that planning beyond the grave is amazing, really, about sustainability. That's how we should think about everything, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic. All right, let's talk a little bit about the guests, the speakers, the presenters. Who would like to talk about that?
Well, Andrea's been working on the website descriptions, so she's probably best.
Okay. Well, I think, as you know, we're really, really excited, of course, that Asbie Brown is going to be our keynote speaker, and also that Asbie, and together with Yoshihiro Takeshita and Alex Kerr, Alex will be joining us via Zoom, and the three of them will again be on the Minka Masters panel. But you of course, moderated last year. This year, Stuart's going to moderate the panel. So as you can imagine, we're very, very excited about that. And I think we're also really excited that we have some people returning who have led workshops before or participated in panels or given solo presentations before. And then also we have a number of people that haven't presented or perhaps haven't come to the summit before. So I think it'll be a really, really fascinating and exciting mix of people that are new to the summit or new to speaking at the summit, and then people that are, you know, that are familiar faces. And I was just thinking before we spoke to, you know, before we joined you today, that one of the things that I really love about the Minka Summit is that there's really something for everyone, you know, and something that resonated or kind of occurred to me was that this year, I think that there's going to be a lot of something for everyone, you know. So people that are coming because they'd like to participate in a workshop related to traditional carpentry, there'll be something for them. People who might be interested in indigo dyeing, there'll be something for them. People who are interested in, efforts or initiatives to protect and preserve traditional Japanese built cultural heritage, there'll be a lot for them. And that's reflected, I think, in the sessions, in the speaker sessions, the panel discussions. You mentioned earlier about the Noto Hanto discussion that Lauren is going to be moderating, and also, you know, in the workshops and demonstrations. So there's just going to be a really, really wonderfully wide and also a very deep variety of things that people can see and go and participate in. And if I can just comment, one thing that I'm really quite interested in this year, among many, is that we have 18 members of the North American Timber Framers Guild coming to join us. I think last year in Shinshiro, 4 people came, and this year we have a lot more people coming. And I think that as the summit grows and more people are coming from abroad, not only the timber framers, but also from Hawaii, there's quite a sizable group who are involved in Milt Yamada's group called Japan Kominka Rescue, and they're coordinating efforts between communities in Hawaii and a community in Niigata. So, I think that as we have people coming from abroad, it's a really wonderful opportunity for cross-pollination of ideas and sharing of, you know, both not only traditional carpentry techniques or artisan techniques, but also ideas about what we can do here in Japan to protect and preserve kominka and revitalize communities.
I think one of the interesting things is that when we did the first summit, it was at the tail end of COVID. So we had 2 or 3 people who somehow managed to get into Japan. I don't know how. But this year, we expect a much larger international presence, for one thing. And also, I think that the first summit, we had primarily people who were already Minka owners or were actively searching for Minka. And I think now we're getting probably this year a lot more people that are coming because of interest in the Akiya movement and all the media coverage for that. So we're trying to make little adjustments for the changing audience. One thing I don't think was mentioned so far, but talk that was just finalized today, in fact, was we're going to have a panel by lifelong carpenters who are going to give a presentation about what you should look for when you're looking for a minka, you know, the whole process of things you should keep an eye out for in terms of structural issues and termites and checking things outside and checking the gray water system and all these sort of details that you see people asking about all the time, not just on our page, but on other Facebook groups. So I think, you know, we'll be able to service those, that particular audience that are just starting out in the process.
That sounds great. I remember visiting longtime carpenter John Stollenmeyer, who was at the first Minka Summit as well, and seeing his house that he was renovating. And he said, yeah, one of the no-nos is when the structure doesn't even meet the foundation. And, you know, like that, even that basic level of understanding is something that someone who isn't a carpenter, who doesn't know, that it's maybe obvious to them, right?
Yeah,
so
that
kind of deep knowledge is so useful. Yeah, awesome. Can you drop any names? Who's going to be on that panel?
I'm reluctant just because I don't know their full names.
Okay.
There's Ryosei-san and Ishii-san, but we'll get more information. We need to get Ishii-san's given name, so we're waiting on that. But
well, that's wonderful. And then that kind of panel in combination with the Hisaya Furuhara-san, who's talking about the kind of wood that was traditionally used for Minka and for building traditional houses, and that deep knowledge that most people have no idea about as well. So you've got a lot of deep knowledge that people can take away when they're looking for good value purchases too, right? Or even repairs as well, right? All right. You have Marcus Consolini again from Diamond Brewery, right?
Yep.
So
yeah, he'll be on a panel about heritage buildings in Japan.
And Asby Brown again for the keynote speaker. So that'll be at the dinner
talk,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then this year, Jeremy Phillips, right?
Yeah, he'll be on a panel this year. He's not doing an independent presentation.
And then Nils Wetterling?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. Nils' son will be giving a solo presentation, and you know, he's a really an expert in restoring machia. I think mainly he's other heritage buildings as well, but I think his real expertise, or maybe his real interest, currently is in machia in Kyoto, and I'm sure that's going to be a very, very interesting talk.
He has a really great background with some very high-profile projects with big hotels around the world. And then also this great website that we're looking at right now, the heritage buildings, why these old buildings have value. I think this will be a great talk. Mm. He's one of the sponsors for the event as well, is he?
He is, indeed. We're very, very grateful to him indeed, both for coming and speaking and sharing his long experience and expertise, of course, and also his generosity, because it does make it possible for us to organize this event. And also the generosity of Daimon, of Marcus at Daimon, of course, he's now sponsoring for the third year. And then, you know, some other organizations as well, including our good friends at Hapya Brews. I don't know if they're going to be able to join us, but their beer will join us. It would be better if it was them as well as their beer, but we will have their beer, and they very kindly are supporting us financially as well.
Wonderful. And this year, for the first time, Stuart, you mentioned on the Facebook page the collaboration with Miwa. You want to talk
about
that?
That's right, yes. I mean, basically, we have, it seems like more and more with each summit, we have guests who are, particularly guests coming from abroad, who don't speak Japanese, who would struggle with trying to book one of these remote ryokans where there's no English spoken. And they, you know, even just renting a car is very difficult logistically for them coming from abroad. So for those folks, we decided to try something this year. So we partnered with Miwa, and they created a really nice package where you can stay in a very nice ryokan in the city, and they'll bus you up each day and bring you back each night. And the package includes the 3-day pass. It includes the dinner tickets. The Saturday night dinner is sold out, but I think they still have maybe 5 tickets through their package. So if you're really desperate to come to the dinner, that's one way you can still get in.
And that, you know, I mean, what I mentioned before you joined, when we started, Stuart, how amazing it is that you guys are organizing this amazing event from different parts of the country, but doing everyone's travel and stay on top of what you're already doing with organizing the event is kind of above and beyond. So having someone who really knows how to help people coming from outside Japan, that must really help.
Support the event, right? Yeah, we tend to get a lot of calls where we sort of have to be a concierge in addition to everything else. And I need a place, it has to be this, and I've got to be able to walk to this. And it's kind of, so it's kind of like, just call Miwa, they'll deal with you.
Yeah.
So
Lauren knows those issues all too well, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's my day job. I don't want it for my volunteer life.
So for the Minka Mall, who would like to talk about the Minka Mall?
Well, I guess I can. I mean, it's gonna be very consistent with the last 2 years. It'll be a real variety like it's been in the past with antique stalls and craftspeople and nonprofits, you know, just a mix. Some of them are already on the website as you're scrolling, I can see. One thing that will be different though is that we're going to section off one part of the space where the Minka Mall is for workshops. So that will be ongoing throughout the summit. So people can come down for the workshop and then hopefully stroll through the Minka Mall, and it should be a win-win for everybody having it.
One thing we're trying to do is we really want to connect the older artisans and craftsmen, and to give them a chance to have a space where they can show their skills, whether it's a traditional Japanese carpentry or something else. And they can share their knowledge with younger people, people that are doing renovations of Minka. You know, it's just an opportunity to try to pass on this information that is slowly getting lost. So that's one of our main goals. And then also through the sort of Minka Undokai that's still in the planning stages, we want to bring together experienced carpenters and forest industry and lumberjack type people from all different parts of Japan, but also many people from the United States and possibly elsewhere. And we'll mix them up all together into three teams, like a, you know, children's undokai. And it'll be a chance for, you know, them to bond together as these teams, these international teams. Initially we thought, gee, let's have Japan versus USA and see what happens, you know, but mixing them all up makes more sense, because then they can, you know, they have to communicate and they show one another things and stuff. And I think that'll be a really wonderful experience for those people who participate in that.
So Undokai, for people who don't know, is like a sports event at school, right? And you have the white team versus the red team versus the green team, and you have different points. So I love the idea of mixing everyone up into different teams and competing.
Yeah.
Make it fun competition.
So we don't really know yet what it's going to consist of. I mean, we're thinking of doing joinery competitions and wood, you know, chopping wood and things like that. And we'd love to have things like, you know, people racing up tree trunks, you know, to the top and stuff. But we have to look into the liability issues of that kind of thing.
Yeah. So,
but we'll come up with something really fun, I think.
Well, that sounds great. So you guys are really building on your strengths from previous events. Every year, is it getting a little bit more streamlined because you've been doing it with the same core group from the beginning, right?
In some ways, it's streamlined. It's still an enormous amount of work, but we really listen to the feedback that we get from people each time and try to make things run more smoothly. And also address, issues that come up. I mean, one of the interesting things that happened with Aichi, for instance, the facility that Andrea found for that summit was beautiful. I mean, a really great facility. But one of the interesting things that we discovered is at that facility, as great as it was, things were kind of far from one another. And as a result of that, people weren't able to mingle as much as they had in Hanase. And so we did get some feedback from people saying, you know, at Hanase, I could meet people a lot easier and connect with people. So it's like we're really trying to listen to those comments and make adjustments based on the experiences, you know, pro and con people have.
Yeah, that's really important, isn't it? Because I think people, like, what did Alex Kirk call it? Like Glastonbury or
Woodstock,
right? Yeah. So it really was like the first year was so much people meeting from all over. Oh, what? Wow, you came from Yamaguchi? What? Yeah. You came from Ishikawa? Like, people came from all over. And it was a great way to mingle and really hear loads of people's stories, not just the people speaking on stage, but all the attendees were amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me personally, I think that was like, you know, that's always the primary goal is to bring people together in that way. And, you know, people discovered, oh, we're in the same prefecture. We're only 15 kilometers away from each other. Let's get together. And, or they're in different parts of Japan, but they're working on something really similar. And so they make plans to visit one another and that kind of thing. So those kind of connections are really wonderful when they happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I was looking in the car park and I noticed that I wasn't the only one from Hiroshima area. Mm. And now I'm connected to Lawrence in Yamaguchi because of your first summit.
Oh,
and
that's
we
great.
Came from a similar area, right? So you never know.
Yeah.
It's awesome. One more speaker. Oh, Shelley Clark.
Yeah.
So somebody want to talk about her topic?
I think, Stuart, you talked to Shelley, didn't you?
About heritage of the building and the history of the building.
Right, connecting. I mean, that's a really important thing that we always emphasize on the Facebook page. And I think Shelley is sort of zeroing in on this idea that when you buy a minka, you're not just buying a house, you're buying into a community that you have a shared responsibility. And this is always kind of a sometimes controversial topic on the Facebook page because of the Akiya boom, a lot of people want to just buy a house and try to flip it or turn it into a vacation house or an Airbnb. And, you know, on one hand, it's nice to save a minka from oblivion, but at the same time, it doesn't really help the community, and you're not really connecting with people, and that's so important, particularly now because villages like mine, for instance, because of the depopulation, we have to keep them going and try to build them up at least enough so that we can continue with the essential services like having a fire station and having a koban and, you know, all the really basic stuff that you need to have and a school. So, you know, we're going to Kuta on the tours, and their last school age kid graduated like last year, so they have no school anymore. So I think those bonds are really important, and I think that that's pretty much the topic of Shelley's talk.
That heritage and respecting the house, right? That's something Alex Kerr often talks about. And I talked to a woman the other day who's in Ehime, and she and her partner did such a beautiful job restoring the house. Of course, it's beautiful, comfortable. Everybody wants to stay there. But they have these pictures or items saved from the house and on display, respecting the previous owners. And I just thought, wow, that's so beautiful and stylish. I want to stay there, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, I mean, most of my Minka is the same thing, because I more or less bought the contents of a machia in Kyoto City. So all the tansu and everything are from this other house, pretty much. But it was interesting because the heirs were just going to throw all this stuff in the trash, including boxes and boxes of photos of like Meiji era photos and stuff. And I didn't have the heart. I didn't keep everything. But I said, we have to save some of these. And so I have some photos in different parts of the house. Just as, again, an acknowledgement of the history.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really interesting, but that tie back to previous owners and stuff, it shows respect and how you want to be part of the community as well, right?
Yeah.
And part of the history.
Well, and the other thing too is, you know, I sort of think of myself not as the owner of the Minka, but the sort of the current caretaker.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I'm gone, somebody else will have it, hopefully, and keep it going. So, yeah, I'm just minding it for now, you know, hopefully, you know, 30 years or something. We'll see.
Well, it's a similar idea like Furuhara-san, right? And planting trees for 400 years from now. If you're taking care of your Minka, you're hoping there's another owner after you, that you're not the last, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
wonderful. One more speaker, Miro, this year. Right? Yeah,
he's
on your website,
Very excited to come and have a full presentation.
Yeah, fantastic. I had the chance to hang out with Miro a bit last year. Yeah. And then we went to Toda House, who's one of the sponsors, right? Mm-hmm. And he has so many great insights. So I think his talk is going to be really fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's also going to be on the Noto, the earthquake panel. He'll be our architect, voice of the architects. So.
Wow, amazing. Mm-hmm. All right. Is there anything, the basic information that we haven't covered yet? Let's talk about advice a little bit. I think, Stuart, you were talking about renting a car, carpooling, those kinds of things. Do you want to go?
Right. I mean, I think someone coming to the summit, you're basically much better off if you can rent a car or bring your car with you, because you will want to be driving around to be able to go on the tours and everything else. And we're one thing that is not 100% set at this time is we're trying to work out some kind of system where we can use a bus and to move people around who don't have cars, but it's proving really difficult. The first year, everybody, all the people who came to the summit were really generous about carpooling and, oh, you need a ride back into the Kyoto City, I can give you a ride back. And That was really wonderful, and I think we're going to rely on that to some extent this year as well. But you're much better off with a car, and it's you know, for me, I've been living here in this area for 8 years now, so it's everything second nature. I know some people are intimidated by mountain roads a little bit, but there are alternative ways to get to Hanasei that are really pretty easy, and you just have to, you know, drive carefully, just common sense driving. So
yeah, I drove my electric car there last the first year, and it was fine. The roads, yeah, a little bit windy, a little bit bumpy, but yeah, go slow, be careful.
Look in the mirrors, yeah.
Let people go, let the locals go, they know the roads, right? Yeah. Take your time. but also, you said there is a bus, right? 4 times a day.
Yes, there is a city bus. It's very slow and it's also not cheap, but you can use public transportation to get here. And there is a bus stop right in front of Koryu no Mori, the main venue for the summit. So there is that. It's just not, it's not like you know, the Yamanote line in Tokyo. It doesn't come every 5 minutes.
But so cute. Yeah. I remember hearing it because it plays Green Sleeves, right?
Right. Yeah, Green Sleeves going north and Anna Laurie going south.
Oh, so, yeah. The country life.
Yeah.
That's what you love about the country life. There was also information about volunteering. Do you still need volunteers?
Oh, we would love to have more volunteers. Absolutely. And, you know, that's actually a really good way. If you don't have a car, if you volunteer, the way we've set it up is if you are willing to volunteer for 2 4-hour shifts over the weekend, and these can be really easy jobs where you're like checking badges and things, and you can still watch the listen to the presentations or go on the tours and, you know, still participate, but do a little bit of work. If you work those 2 4-hour shifts, then you can get free shared accommodations at our Minka Annex, which we had last time 2 years ago. So the accommodations are nice, and you'll get transportation back and forth to the main venue. So, and you'll get like a stipend for lunch. So it's a good way if you don't have a lot of money or you don't have a car.
Yeah, good tip. Also, maybe have signups for people who might have a free car. People just writing on the Facebook page if they've got space in their car to help people get back and forth. Something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think we're going to do something on the Facebook page. And we're also this year, we're going to have a big board in the Minka Mall where people are going to be able to post messages to one another. Hey, I need a ride back into Kyoto tonight. And, you know, that kind of stuff. People will be able to exchange messages and stop by and look at the big board and connect with one another that way.
That's great. One other speaker we didn't mention yet, a new speaker this year, David Kapara.
Yes, yes. He's, you know, he is a really, I actually haven't met him face to face, but he's probably a familiar face to many of us because he does a lot of reporting, remote reporting on Japan and Japan issues through, I think, CNN Japan and other outlets. But he also, bought a Minka recently and is very interested in this world now. So he's going to be participating as well.
Yeah, wonderful. Really interesting background from JET. A lot of us came initially on the JET program. He was JET and then journalist, like you said, doing a lot of big news outlets. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other? I think we've mentioned all the main themes and advice.
We have everything is still sort of being added and there's lots more to come, but we're starting to add food vendors. We have Mexican cuisine coming back. There's going to be since last time the park has opened a small restaurant with really basic food like gyudon and udon and things like that, but it has both indoor and outdoor seating. It's very nice if you want to eat that. We have a company called Rai Rai coming. They have these wonderful little small dishes. You can see those pictures of that kind of stuff on the website. And of course, this year we're going to really try to do a good job on the vegetarian cuisine for the dinner. So, yeah, I figured you'd like that. So,
I appreciate that. Yeah. And I think many of us will. No, I saw that you've got a local vendor.
Yes, yes. A small little husband and wife shop called Honey Ant. and they're hardcore organic vegan items. It's in a way one of those model rural businesses that I don't think they do a lot of local business. I mean, we go there, my wife and I, and buy, you know, olive oil and things like that occasionally from them. But I think they do a lot of their business online and have been pretty successful. But they also occasionally do food workshops and cooking workshops and things. And they also do some catering of vegetarian meals. So
that's wonderful.
I think you'll be very happy.
And so nice to use a local vendor. That's so wonderful.
Oh, well, whenever possible, we certainly want to try to do that.
Fantastic. What numbers are we talking? Like, how many people have been attending first year, second year, and then now so far? How many people are coming?
I think vaguely it was around 400 people in the first year, 2022, and then around 450 last year. So we're figuring maybe 500 people this time.
Wow. It is growing.
Yeah. We're gonna
that amazing? It grew even during COVID.
Yeah, well, it was the tail end of COVID, so yeah.
Right, but the borders were still closed, right?
Yeah, technically, the first year somehow we had one guest from Poland, we had a couple from London who somehow got in. I'm not sure how exactly. So, but yeah, we'll quintuple the population of Hanase, so that'll be nice.
Oh wow! Yeah, I contacted the Highland Inn, just to see, by chance, if he possibly had room. He's right there in Hanase Village, at least for a meal, because he's a fantastic chef. And so he's going to allow me to come and eat there, which is wonderful. But he said most of the bookings happened really fast from people outside of Japan. So yeah. I was like, oh, that's great. That's wonderful.
Yeah, he's got Shelly staying there and then two other sets, somebody from Alaska, some people from Hawaii, I think. So
yeah, and we do, there are some places that are still available. There's a place called Yamano Ie that is in Hanase. It's about 15 minutes away by car, but they still have lots of rooms. There are places in Ohara, which is a village that's really, really beautiful. If you remember At Home with Venetia in Kyoto, but that's where her show emanated from. And, you know, certainly there are places in the city, and there's also in Keihoku, about 30, 35 minutes away by car. There's a place called the Kyoto Seminar House. I think they still have some rooms available when we last checked in with them.
That's awesome. You guys have that great PDF list with loads of recommendations. Are you updating, like, when places are full, are you taking them off, or that's a lot of extra work, right?
That's a lot of extra work.
People can just go through the list because you've got all the great links and everything. That's good enough. Yeah.
Anyway, can I just add into what Stuart was just saying about Seminar House in Keihoku? I do know that they do have rooms. Some of them are shared. And then also what Stuart was just mentioning about Yamano Ie in Hanase, which is about 15 minutes from the summit, I've already reserved a number of rooms for the groups that we're connected with. And I think that they still do have, you know, quite a bit available. And, you know, it's maybe perhaps a little bit more basic accommodation and shared accommodation, but the price is very good. So if there are people that are, you know, struggling a bit, maybe to find ryokan accommodation or something like that, that this is a possibility. Can I also just comment, and I think Lauren mentioned this earlier, that we're adding content regularly to the website. So, you know, if people do visit the website, they'll find more and more and more information every week about sessions and workshops, also about the Minka Mall, about various food vendors and artisan booths that people will be having, and really a lot of information. There's a lot of information there now, but there'll be much, much, much more information added very regularly.
It's fantastic what you guys are doing, and keep updating. I think Stuart mentioned you guys are all burning the midnight oil.
We are, yes.
Late night meetings, lots of back and forth communication, I imagine. It might be getting easier year by year, but with more and more people coming, that's more and more work too, right?
Mm-mm, that's true. Yeah. I mean, Andrea and I certainly, you know, with the Hanase Wan the first year and Andrea with Aichi the second year, we both had the same experience, which was we basically spent the month after the summit, like in bed, just, you know, unable to move. So.
Oh my gosh. Well, I remember, Stuart, the first year, didn't the local council people come out? And
oh, yeah.
All the local people were saying they were so surprised to see so many people interested in old houses.
They couldn't believe
it. How do they feel now? Are they still in shock?
I think they are still in shock. I mean, the really strong impression was, you know, we give free passes to Hanase residents. So a lot of people came, and when they arrived at the venue, they're looking at all the license plates, and they just, it's like, these people all over Japan, what are they doing here? And these foreigners, they like Minka. They couldn't believe it. So, and as I mentioned before, I mean, I mentioned the Minka last time that one of the attendees was trying to buy. You know, it was a gentleman in his, I guess, 70s, and his ryokan was kind of, you know, a little bit falling on hard times, a little bit run down, and he was just flabbergasted that anybody would actually not only want to buy it, but keep raising his offer, hoping to, you know, have a sale. And he just couldn't believe it. So he was really touched by that it's like he thought his place was worthless. And here was this guy who was offering him tons and tons of money for it. So I think it had a really, and also the ryokan where Alex stayed last time was another ryokan that had been, because of COVID and everything else, it had really had some hard times financially. And Alex loved being there. I mean, he saw past the fact that the floors were sinking a little bit here and there and stuff like that. And so I think he must have had these wonderful talks with the owners. And after he left and we came to visit them, the owners, to say thank you for hosting Alex, they were like, oh, he's so nice. And we just had this great experience. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it really is good for the community. So
that's great. Remind us again how many people live in Hanase Village.
I would say it's probably a little under 100 full-time residents.
Wow.
And there were probably about 500 people at its peak, would be my
and
guess.
How many abandoned or Akia empty houses?
Lots. Yeah, I mean, just in my Minka, from my front window, I can see four or five Minka that are all empty.
Wow.
So, and they're not really abandoned. They're just, they're owned by somebody who doesn't know what to do with them because it's too expensive to tear them down. It's too they're not going to get anything for it if you try to sell it. It's cost too much money to renovate it, because it's not going to make it any more valuable. So it's this long, long process of trying to convince people to, you know, if you go these routes where you can get some funding from the government to do some basic repairs and get, you know, my wife and I are really trying to bring families into the village, families with children, to keep the school going and everything else. And I think it just, you know, it just takes I think in the case of my village, if we had 20 people move in, it would make a huge difference. And these houses, so many of them are just really, really beautiful. When people see Gwen's house in Kuta, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous Minka, and it's just sitting empty. So, you know, it'd be great if over the weekend somebody said, I want it. You know? So
that would be a great event result.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I don't think we've talked about in these talks yet is the My Village.
Right.
I visited Ed in Nagano last summer, And he was so excited to be listed as one of the My Village places. Who can tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it's just, you know, I started it because every probably two or three times a year, I have somebody stop by in front of my house and knock on my door and say, do you know if there's any Minka available here for sale? I want to move to this area. And there is an empty house program in Hanase, but it's, sorry to say, completely dysfunctional. So it's really not effective. So my wife and I on our own have taken it upon ourselves to try to help people whenever we can. If they're looking for something, we'll happily sit down with them under our gazebo and try to answer their questions and offer them advice, and even in some cases drive them around and show them some places that might be available. And the My Village program is a way to kind of formalize that a little bit, where people, foreign residents particularly, who live in these villages, who are trying to help repopulate them, particularly with families, they can post images and information about their village, such as, you know, where is the nearest bank? Where is the nearest gas station? Where is the nearest hospital? And, you know, really basic essential information. And then if you see a village that you like or is close to you where you work, or for whatever reason you're interested, you can contact that person representing that village, and they can answer additional questions. And in most cases, they would be happy to have you come up and meet with them and have a more detailed talk, and they can show you around the village a little bit or introduce you to the local Akia people and so on. So it hasn't been enormously successful so far, but it's been a little bit successful, where we've had some inquiries and some people visiting and taking advantage of it. So at the summit, we're going to try to get more people to sign up to volunteer their village into the program. And I think the more villages we have listed, the more traffic we'll get from people looking for a place to live.
Yeah, absolutely. And someone in that area who doesn't mind being part of like the ambassador program, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The person who will answer questions when people come pick them, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, pretty much if I'm at home and as long as I have the time, I'm happy to sit down and talk with people about the Minka and what's nearby and what the schools are like and what the neighbors are like and all that kind of stuff. And some of the questions that people want answers to, you're not going to get from a realtor or an Akia Bank program person.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Ed was telling me, yeah, you sometimes get a lot of emails or contacts from dreamers, you know, like people, there's probably no way they're going to come and buy the house or live in your neighborhood. But they're dreaming, they're interested, right? And so if you have it on this website, at least people can read about it and get most of the information. And then if they're serious, they can reach out to the ambassador and maybe go visit. I think a lot of these ambassadors have had people come and show them around the neighborhood, like you said.
Yeah, actually, I think most of the people that I've actually talked to that have actually come and I've met with, they have ended up getting a Minka somewhere, not necessarily in Hanase, but, you know, somewhere in Kyoto Prefecture or somewhere. I mean, they are definitely committed.
I think like you had Jaya at the first Minka Summit talking about how he did it and his YouTube channel, which has had millions of views, right? Like people sharing that information about how they did it, how they got through all the hurdles, and then coming to the Minka Summit. You're going to meet so many people like that, right?
Yeah.
So many people that have done that step a little bit in front of what you want to do, right?
Yeah. Well, and the thing too is that Kominka Japan embraces that entire range of people, because there are some people who buy an Akia that's, you know, almost falling down, but they get it for, you know, $5,000 or something, and do all their DIY work themselves, and they find recycled stuff really inexpensively, and they do all the work themselves. And then there are sort of at the opposite end, something like Heritage Homes, which does really fantastic work, but it's also not cheap. So you know, there are many different ways to renovate and restore a Minka. And, you know, I think we need to be open to everybody. You know, there is no one right way of doing it.
That is a great way to end it. I love that. Stuart, right on the mark, right on 60 Minutes. I love it. Thank you guys so much for joining. Really excited about the Minka Summit once again this year. Keep up the good work. There are still tickets available, just not to the dinner, right?
Just not to the dinner.
All right. Louise said, interesting as always. Thank you so much, Louise. She's in New Zealand. I bet she's thinking about buying a Minka in Japan now.
Yeah.
Come on over. We'd love to have you as part of our community, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Have a great night and see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Way out, he'll shout goodbye up to